gets into three specific actions for me. Contribute, belong, and learn. Contribute is service, belong is unity, to learn is to uncover, discover, and discard what's blocking me. The more that I live in the center of that triangle, the more that I change. All of my life, I predicated everything on how I feel and how I think. And what I've learned to do is exactly the opposite. To take actions I don't believe in, and that changes the way I think and eventually the way I feel. And then I look back and I say, man, how did you ever live like that? It's like driving iron every day. You lift weights every day. You gonna get strong? Does it matter how you feel about it? You know, we have greeters at our meetings, and I stand at a door of an AA meeting and I greet people. Hi, I'm Adam. Hi, I'm Adam. Hi, I'm Adam. It doesn't matter if I'm thinking, I hope you drink and die. And I walk in that meeting every single week, and you know what everyone says? Adam, great to see you, man. How you doing? Because I cannot separate cause from effect. I take commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel needed. I have a sense of commitment, a sense of usefulness, a sense of purpose. I discover and uncover the things that are blocking me in inventory, and eventually I find freedom. This is the only prison where the key's inside. And until I really understand that I'm in a prison, I can't get free from it. Until I see it in inventory, until I see and understand these ideas in the fellowship and in the program through the literature, I'm not going to get free. The power, the program, the process. It's very, very simple. There's a difference between the act of surrender and the state of surrender. The act of surrender is what got me into AA as a newcomer over and over and over and over again. Big difference between the act of surrender that gets a newcomer into AA and the state of surrender that keeps the old timer here. It's a completely different concept. It's a difference between what gets us here and what keeps us here. It's kind of like watching a swan glide across a pond of still water. It's so beautiful. It's so effortless. It's so graceful. But you know what's going on under the water, right? That swan's paddling like hell. And if you're new, we have a chapter in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Into Action. There's no chapter into feelings. Right? No chapter into thinking. We ought to have a chapter into whining from the podium at the noon meeting. I'm like, dude, get a job. And again, I became willing to take those actions in that triangle until my feelings and my thinking begin to change. I have to really understand that. There's a guy by the name of Dr. Harry Tebow. Harry Tebow is one of the contributing members to some of our original literature. You can Google him. It's not an outside issue. And, you know, what Tebow talks about is the difference between compliance and surrender. Compliance, if you're new, is cooperation without agreement. Surrender, a completely different concept. And I've been in compliance with AA for years, doing it for sober living, doing it for the judicial system, doing it for the parole department, doing it for DCSF. Where I live on the west side of LA, they do it for the trust fund. It's a good motive, right? But see, that concept of surrender, the concept of surrender, like that soldier that lays down that rifle, is unconditional. It's unconditional. This is not an intellectual pursuit. Again, I have to have an experience with alcohol. I have to come to see that self-reliance fails me. I had to get to a place where it becomes for me, like a lot of us, life or death. The idea to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. Think about it. The word concede means to surrender with a fight. And if you're new, every alcoholic defends their right to drink. Think about it. It's part of being an alcoholic, is I'm going to defend my right to drink. And I have to be clear on these ideas. If you're a drunk like me, trust me, fear's not going to keep me sober. Getting a third strike, living on the street, being homeless, losing my career, throwing away my education, giving up my family. Did scared straight work for you guys? Right over my head. Now, the big book talks about the problem drinker and illustrates the problem drinker as someone that can stop or moderate given sufficient reason, right? Big difference between a problem drinker and a real alcoholic. Hey, if you get a problem drinker and a real alcoholic in a jail cell, like a drunk tank for drunk driving, you got two completely different philosophies going on. You got the problem drinker over here on one side of the cell thinking, man, why'd I drink so much last night? I knew I shouldn't have drank that fifth beer. Why'd I drink so much? Real alcoholic sitting over here on the other side of the cell thinking, why'd I take I-95? Yeah, the court card people never laugh at that joke. Shit ain't funny. You could have been home cleaning your pipe today. I know what y'all do around here. Problem drinker's wife says, honey, if you don't stop drinking, I'm leaving you. Problem drinker cleans up his act, doesn't drink in the house, gets a little Visine. Now, if my woman says to me, honey, if you don't stop drinking, I'm leaving you, you know what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking about single life. Think about it. Get honest here. If anything got in the way of alcohol or that other stuff, it was out of my life. Alcohol completed me. It had me from hello. To concede to my innermost self. Of course I'm going to defend my right to drink. You think I'm going to let go of the love of my life without a fight? I can't even let go of a bad relationship. And I have to understand that relationship with alcohol, that if anything got in the way of booze, it was out of my life. If you're new, in order for me to stay in recovery, if anything gets in the way of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps, it's out of my life. A woman, I don't care how beautiful she is, how much she lauds me, how great she makes me look. I got an ego. I remember the first time I said that from the podium, there she was in the back of the room. She's like, honey, you don't look like an alcoholic. Oh my goodness. You're not speaking again, are you, sweetie? It's Saturday. Why do you got to go to all those meetings, honey? You know that program, AA, it's getting in the way of our relationship. So a couple months later, it's Thanksgiving again. It's meet the family night. So I'm on suit and tie, I'm at the head of the table. Thanksgiving Eve, out comes the exotic wine. She's like, honey, oh, you can have one glass of wine. It's just a glass of wine. Come on, sweetie. Oh, come on, it's natural wine. Four more rehabs. Oh, I stole her purse that night. Went down to the hood and got an outside issue. And she came to detox with a get well card. Now, I know I'm going to offend some of you guys tonight. Don't be offended. I know if you're, you know, I mean, she had another problem going on. You know, she belonged to another program. For her, a slip was 10 minutes of compassion. told you I was going to offend you. They can't stand to see us have fun. I tried to send her to Codependents Anonymous. She wouldn't go. You know why? She didn't have anyone to go with. Yeah, I told her when she dies, someone else's life will flash before her eyes. You guys know what a codependent is, right? Y'all know the difference between a codependent and a toilet seat? Toilet seat don't follow you around after you shit all over it. He told me I could cuss a little bit. Now, don't tell... I hope you didn't bring your significant other here, because if you relapse, you ain't getting no more money on your books. Now they know the truth. Right? I know, you're feeling stupid. I've been there.
I've been there.
Been played for a fool again. God, I love AA, man. I do. And I've been on both sides of that. I've done the same thing. You know, that's why we say if the alcohol don't get you, the lifestyle will. You know, we go out there and we chase it in other ways. I'm addicted to drama, excitement, and BS. You know, and eventually I grow through that just like I grow through everything else. You know, I got to understand these ideas. I mean, I have sponsees that pay more in taxes than I earn all year. They have these huge careers and these little tiny AA programs. I've never seen one of them stand the test of time here. What do I do for a living? I stay sober. Oh, what do I do for money? That's over there. Now, if I get those two things mixed up, I'm back in handcuffs. I get those two things mixed up, I'm back in an emergency room. Or I get a double header, I'm handcuffed to a gurney in an emergency room. Right? With a cop trying to get an outside issue out of my mouth. Oh, I've been there. I have been there. I swallowed it, officer. I'm gonna beat it out of you. Now you know why it's easy for me to be grateful, huh? And I have to be clear on these ideas, that if anything gets in the way of recovery, it's out of my life. You know, if you feel like you're on the outside looking into this thing, you know, there's a big difference with being in the program and on the program. Sounds like the same thing? It's the same as being in a submarine or on a submarine. Now, when the ship takes a dive, you'll find out if you're in it or on it. The certain low points ahead, as Wilson talks about. If I fail to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life. When it becomes a matter of life and death, there's an earnestness about this. Then we talk about, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. The problem with me as an alcoholic is when someone like me stops drinking, the outsides get better, but the insides get worse. A lot of people stop drinking, the outsides get better, the insides get better. That's not my experience. That first step concept is that I've got a body that can't process alcohol. I have a mind that can't process reality. And that's the mind that will always take me back to drinking. Those are two completely independent thoughts. That mind will always take me back unless I have a psychic change. And I will try to put anything in front of that to solve that problem. I have to understand the origin of this, the self-centeredness, the root of alcoholism. And unless I address that, there really isn't a solution for me. Self-knowledge won't fix someone like me. I mean, I've had every relapse prevention class known to man. You know, I'm in treatment 28 times. I'm back in relapse prevention class, learning about my triggers. I'm like, counselor, 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 waking up's a trigger for me. Sir, will you please go back to your dorm? And I'm back on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles, drunk again, pissing in my pants with a bottle of whiskey, reciting chapter 5 out of the big book. And the bum next to me is like, will you shut up, man? You're ruining my high. Give me that bottle. And I'm crying because I can't get back here. Because I got a head full of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a belly full of booze, and I'm separate, different, and alone one more time. And if you're new and you think that's painful, you know what's worse? Being here today, being a real alcoholic, and not working the 12 steps. It's worse. Coming to meetings late, leaving early, not having a sponsor, not working the steps, you got no anesthetic. It could be worse. That's why, you know, we have all these moments of appreciation for the guy in his first 30 days. We ought to have a moment of recognition for the person in their last 30 days. Hey, you can always spot him. Just ask him how he's doing. I'm fine. I'm like, really? Why don't you tell your face that? Huh? You know what I'm talking about. Remember so-and-so used to sit right there? He went home and shot himself. Overdose. It's back in prison. See, I don't want to be in my last 30 days. I know what it's like to be in Alcoholics Anonymous and be in my last 30 days. I know what it's like to sit in a room like this, surrounded by people and fellowship, and make a decision to drink. And you know what? It's over. I'm puking my guts out before I get to the liquor store. I make a decision to drink. You think I'm going to call my sponsor? It's the last guy I'm going to call. And all of my life, I was one decision away from a drink. And today, because of recovery, there's a whole world between me and that decision. And it's about commitment. It's about traditions. It's about people like you, rooms like this, a plan of action, a loving higher power. And you'll hear people say, oh, we're all the same distance from a drink. I don't believe that. You think this guy sitting here has got 4 or 5 commitments, being of service, working with new guys, doing step studies? You think he's the same distance from a drink as this guy here that's doing nothing? And I don't mean you. But it's important for me to understand that concept. That when we talk about nothing ensures immunity more than intensive work with others, that I have to understand there is a solution here. This is not about abstinence. This is not about not drinking. County jail is about not drinking. This is about a plan of action, a design for living, a way of life, a roadmap again to spiritual success that will bring about joy in my life, that will bring about freedom. You know, part of the word spiritual is ritual. And a lot of these unrelated things that you may think that you have to do around here eventually become components that bring about a new way of life. And they seem so unrelated. The things that we do in that triangle. But together, that is greater than the sum of all their parts. And again, I have to look at what my resistance to that new way of life is. You know, I remember telling my sponsor I had a degree when I came to AA. You know what he told me? He said, Adam, thermometers have degrees. You know where they stick those? He was so mean. See, the knowledge is necessary for me to win the confidence of a newcomer where no one else can. Where the clergy couldn't do it, where the therapist couldn't do it, where the drug and alcohol counselor couldn't do it, where the parole department couldn't do it, where the psychiatrist couldn't do it. Another drunk was able to win my confidence because he lived like me. It's necessary, but it's insufficient to keep me sober. I have to give it away, not only to keep it, but to even get it. And if you notice at the end of our meetings, we don't say keep coming back. It works if you know it. We say, keep coming back, it works if you work it. And I had to understand that this plan of action, this way of life, is based on commitment and action. Thinking it through doesn't work for a guy like me. Just play the tape through. I love that one. Driving my brand new car past Skid Row. Playing the tape through. You know, my head tells me, oh, Skid Row wasn't that bad. Toothless honey, cardboard box, I can make it on Skid Row. And normal people don't laugh at that. That's insanity. See, I always thought insanity was doing the same thing and expecting different results. Isn't that what you hear in AA? That's not the insanity I live with. I have a completely different brand of insanity. It's doing the same thing, knowing exactly what's going to happen and what. Doing it anyway. Right? At least the other kind of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting different results. At least there's some hope there. Right? Yeah, but I know exactly what's going to happen and I do it anyway. And that's what points back to why I'm powerless. Because I've lost the power of choice. Because my mind will always take me back there. Unless I have a plan of action in my life, a design for living, my mind will take me back to drinking. And again, I keep thinking the problem is alcohol. I have to be clear on that idea in my life. It's very interesting because, you know, we talk about chapter 5. We read chapter 5 in every meeting in Southern California, all over. And that's usually when everyone goes into text mode, right? It's like we've heard it so many times. But one of the interesting things in chapter 5 is at the end of chapter 5, the part that we read, we talk about three things. It says our personal adventures, right, before and after, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my own life. B, that probably no human power can relieve my alcoholism, and C, that God could and would have sought. And I'm thinking, before and after what? But see, for me as an alcoholic, it's before and after I stop drinking. A lot of people come into AA and think the unmanageability in the second half of step one is because of drinking. Not necessarily true for everybody. If it's just drinking that's creating the unmanageability, stop drinking. For me, it might be the other way around. That because I need to label, because I need to compare, because I need to judge, because I'm separate, different, and alone, I gotta drink. And that's what's so interesting, because Wilson, in the doctor's opinion, talks about the phenomenon of craving that ties us all together. A lot of people I drank with come into AA, and as soon as they put the drink down, something magical happens. They fit in, they're part of, the career welcomes them back, they come to meetings once a year, never work a step, and their life gets consistently better. They've been serene since their ass hit the seat in AA. That's not my experience. My experience, every time I put the drink down, the first thing they say to me is, boy, you need to be on medication. My God, why are you so emotional? What's wrong with you? Why can't you sit still back there? And I'm crying at dog food commercials. When I'm not drinking, I have a whole other set of problems. They're outlined on page 52 of the Big Book. When I'm not drinking, I'm a prey to misery and depression. When I'm not drinking, I can't control my emotional nature. When I'm not drinking, I can't manage my personal relationships. Sound familiar? When I'm not drinking, I'm full of fear. When I'm not drinking, I'm of no use to other people. I lack purpose. When I'm not drinking, I'm basically unhappy. And the way that plays out for me in untreated alcoholism, the second half of step one, is I don't fit in, I'm not part of, you don't understand me, everybody's in my way, there's no opportunity, life's not fair, I'm not appreciated, she's cheating on me, they're not paying me enough for God's sake, I gotta drink. And you know what's amazing? As soon as I pick up a cocktail, I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. Think about it. Give me two or three more drinks, fear of people and economic insecurity leave me, I'm buying a whole bar of drinks. Hell, I'll write you a check. Not only are you getting better looking, honey, I'm getting better looking. Right? Give me a couple of Vicodin, I can comprehend the word serenity and I know peace. Give me a little cocaine, I want to start a business with you. Come on, really, right? Give me a little meth, I want to take a nap. You give me some heroin, I want to clean the house. That's an abnormal reaction. You guys are laughing at that, there's something wrong with you guys. Does not occur in the normal or temperate drinker. Think about it. Alcohol, by the AMA, is classified as a depressant. Normal people have a couple drinks and they say stuff like, whoa, I gotta slow down, I'm feeling it. I got work tomorrow. I have a couple drinks and hey, I wanna get married. I wanna go to Vegas, baby. You give me a couple drinks, I'm trying to find the car keys I hid for myself before the first drink. See, for me, alcohol's a stimulant. And that's what makes me bodily and mentally different from my fellows. That's what the earth people don't understand about us. They say stuff like, I can't believe you drank again. And I'm like, I can't believe I waited so long. Because I drink for the effect produced. Alcohol does so much for me, I don't care what it's doing to me. When we read the promises, it's so interesting because we suddenly realize that God could do for us what we could not do for ourselves. Didn't some of us suddenly realize that alcohol had done for us what we could not do for ourselves? If that's really true, then there's a relationship between God and alcohol, and you can see it by substitution in the promises. You get into the ghettos in this country where everything's been burned to the ground, there's always two things that stand out. Churches and liquor stores. You know why? Because they both give man hope. And if you're a drunk like me, hope doesn't matter to someone like me until I burned my life to the ground. Hope doesn't matter to someone like me until self-reliance has failed me. Only then do I become willing to take actions that I don't believe in. You ever notice how quick someone will write a four-step, they got a gun to their head? God, I wish I could do that to somebody. Just write the damn thing, will ya? Because I know it'll work. I know it'll work.
Super sponsor.
We need help, but then we want to decide what kind, right? Yeah. Here's a life raft. Oh, I don't want that one. It's blue. Like, I'm going to pick what's good for me. I have to understand. Carl Jung sent a letter to Bill Wilson relating spirit to spirituality, the Latin root. Again, relating God to spirituality and alcohol. Alcohol, for people like me, is an artificial means to a spiritual experience. These 12 simple steps are a practical means to a spiritual experience. You take away the booze, you gotta give me something better. And that, for me, is what this is all about. The problem with AA and the steps, as I saw it in the beginning, is it doesn't work right away. It doesn't happen right away. It takes a little bit of time. In the spiritual experience in the big book, Wilson says, what seldom could have been accomplished by years of self-discipline often occurs in a few short months. Now, people will argue about that all day long. I know people can write a four-step on a napkin in 15 minutes, but I think for the change to come about, it takes patience. It's painstaking. It requires effort. I had to be willing to work at this. And if I lived to be 100 years old, I could never pay Alcoholics Anonymous back for the freedom that I've got and the joy and the love and the relationships. Alcohol's what gave me the courage to ask that beautiful girl to dance, to walk across that dance floor, to go after that big job, to go after that audition. It was alcohol that gave me the wings to fly. And unless I can find that sense of comfort and ease again through this process, I'm not going to stay here. And when I'm not drinking, I'm chasing you four exits past my exit on the interstate, jumping up and down on your hood in traffic. I'm counting your items in the checkout line. At 11. I'm so separate, different, and alone. My own mother's like, for goodness sake, just drink. You are nicer. Chuck C. said it better than anybody. He said, the real problem here isn't alcohol. He said, the real problem is a conscious separation from God. And then he points to the 11th step where you see the solution. Conscious contact with God. And for me, like a lot of us, the bridge from 2 to 11 is steps 4 through 9. Maybe what they should say in AA is, rarely have we seen a person fail that's done steps 4 through 9. Rarely have we ever seen anybody do 4 through 9. Right? I do the AA waltz. 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. And I'll put anything in front of the one thing that will bring about a psychic change. You know, we have a chapter in the book called We Agnostics. If you're new, there's no chapter We Believers. Einstein said, I'd rather live this life pretending there's a God and finding out there's no God than live this life pretending there's no God and finding out there is one. It just had to be that simple for me to be open-minded. I can't deny the power. You can't deny the numbers. A friend of mine said the definition of hell is if God were to show you all the things you might have accomplished if you'd only believed in yourself. If you're new and you can't believe in yourself, believe in the power of this program. Believe in the collective consciousness and the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's undeniable that it's right here in the middle of all of this. It's just this simple. There's a poem in Notre Dame. It says, I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul I could not free. I sought my brother, and I found all three. And that's why we talk about nothing ensures immunity from drinking more than intensive work with others. The therapeutic value of one working with another is without parallel. That simple, basic idea. My sponsor said the 12 steps were like the face of a clock. When I'm in 12, I better be in one with a new guy. Re-experiencing the phenomenon of craving, re-experiencing the obsession of mind, re-experiencing the spiritual malady. You know why the grass is greener over there? It's because they're watering it. And the more that I work with new people, it seems that the more I get clarity, the more that I have freedom. And I had to take a look at my old ideas. I was confronted with a lot of those old ideas. I came in here with a punishing God, with the idea of a condemning God, and I had to be rid of some of those old ideas. You know, I tell people, you get in a closet and pray for a hot dog, you know what will happen, right? You'll die. I don't mean to be mean or blasphemous, but I had to really look at some of the ideas that I'd come in here with. You know, God can move mountains, but you better bring a shovel. You know, or I have a Santa Claus God, that if I'm good, I'm going to get a reward. You know, where I live, we have a parking meter God. You get a parking space, great. You don't. That's a visual. I tell my sponsees, don't pray for women. God's not a pimp. Now, I don't mean to be offensive, but in order for me to understand these ideas, I have to see what's blocking me. Part of the idea of forgiveness in 8 and 9 is that I am going to release people from the prison of my own mind. It has nothing to do with them. And I had to understand, you know, you ever notice when an alcoholic's not having a good day, it's when I'm not getting my way. We're all like 5-year-old kids around here with old people's faces. Oh, really? You don't believe it? Cross one of us. I'll resent you for generations, man. And that's so clear with me, is that I am the actor trying to be the director. Wilson's so clear on that. I'm trying to erase the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and all the players. It's got nothing to do with the play. It has to do with traffic. It has to do with my employer. It has to do with my relationship. And if everyone would do as I wish, life would be wonderful. And you know what? In that play, me being the actor, I found out that I give God a role in my play. And when God doesn't meet my finite human expectations, I become separate from that power. And through inventory, unless I can reconcile the difference between the way I think things ought to be and the way they actually are, I cannot be free. I had to get to the root and cause of alcoholism, what it was that takes me back. A lot of it has to do with me needing to play God and understanding that relationship that Wilson talks about. He's the director, I'm the actor, he's the father, I'm the child. Just this simple. God will steer, but God won't row. And the more I misinterpret that simple idea, the more spiritual pain I'm in. If this sounds familiar to you, then you got what I do. Surrender or be dragged. Right?
Yeah.
Self-will, run riot. One of the things my sponsor said to me, he said, Adam, what do you want from AA? What do you want? What do you keep coming back here for? And you know, with an ego like I have, I said, well, I want a yacht and a Learjet. And you know what he said to me? He said, Adam, if you work steps 4 through 9 and you consistently live in 10, 11, and 12, what you'll get, because I always want to get something, right? I'm in it for, you know, I'm a taker. He said, what you'll get is a quiet mind and a loving heart. And I looked at him and I said, what do I want that for? But see, you guys know, what is the opposite of a quiet mind? This refers to the grouch and the brainstorm in the 4-step. The opposite of a quiet mind is a mind that won't shut up. It's a mind that's up at 3 a.m. telling you're a loser. You're fat. You know that job you got? They're going to do the background check on you tomorrow. Right? It's up 5 minutes before me every day saying, you don't need AA. Those people don't care about you. No one's calling you. And the opposite of a loving heart is a vindictive heart. It's a prejudiced heart. It's a resentful heart. And all of my life, I was crucified between two thieves, yesterday and tomorrow. In yesterday, I have guilt, shame, and remorse. In tomorrow, I have fear, anxiety, and worry. And our spirits are like a body of water. When they're perfectly still, like glass, they best reflect the heavens. The product of inventory eventually is that I get a quiet mind. I can reconcile those two thieves. The past is resentment. I have an inventory for it. The future is fear. The freedom is to be in the moment. You know, one of the things about inventory that I never understood, because you do inventory over and over again, it becomes really redundant. And my friend said to me, you know, if you go to the ATM every day and you withdraw $20, it's boring, it's mundane, it's the same experience. And people don't do it. But what's going on behind the wall? The account's being debited.
Right.
And what I didn't understand is the more I write inventory, the more I see my esteem, my pride, my security, my ambition, my personal relationships, my beliefs, my attitudes, and my ideas, the more I start to emotionally detach from them. The more I'm able to match calamity with serenity. The more that these promises become a reality. This is a very practical method to a psychic change. There is so much science in this. You know, even in all the treatment centers, the doctor's opinion in the cycle of addiction is still the gold standard. And they all throw a big book at us after they take that $50,000 check. It's amazing. And Bill and Bob, we've got this thing. I mean, it's like AA has an answer for you guys. If you're dying of this thing, We have an answer here. You know, you tell a little kid, go in your room and straighten out your room. You think he wants to do that? You tell that same 5-year-old kid, I want you to go in your room and throw out all your old stuff and we'll buy you new stuff. How long would that take? If you're new, don't judge this process. One of the greatest things my sponsor said was, why don't you try everything we suggest for a year, and if it doesn't work, go kill yourself. That's what you wanted to do your whole life anyway. But see, when I really gave everything to AA, when I got the commitments, I went to meetings regularly, I wrote inventory, I got involved in a book study, I went out and I started helping others, my life changed so profoundly that those therapists that had been chasing me around since I was a little kid were asking me what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, I'm taking the 12 antidepressants on the wall, sir. They just don't get it. They just don't get it. AA is the greatest thing that ever happened to me that I didn't want. Because I didn't know what was possible. And one of the things my sponsor said is, Adam, how free do you want to be? You want to be free enough to just survive this? I ask people, how you doing, man? I'm hanging in there. God, I'll buy you a drink if it's that bad. It's not supposed to be like that. Someone said AA is like sex. If you're not having fun, you ain't doing it right. Told you I'd offend some of you guys. I have to find out what it is that's blocking me. You know, this guy comes up to his sponsor. Now, he says to his sponsor, I was in a restaurant last night, and I paid with a 20, and the waitress gave me a change for a 50, and I don't know what to do. And the sponsor says, well, you should give your money back. The girl could lose her job. So he gives the money back. 2 weeks later, the sponsee and the sponsor are out having dinner. Sponsor pays with a 50. Waitress gives the sponsor change for 100. Sponsor puts it right in his pocket. Right. The sponsee gets outside the restaurant. He looks at the sponsor and he says, I can't believe that. She gave you too much money. Why didn't you give the money back? Sponsor looked him right in the eye and he said, it bothered you. Now, don't misinterpret that idea, okay? The idea here is that I have to discover what it is that's blocking me. One of the things we say is where there's hysterics, there's historics. The things that make me hysterical, the things that get me excited, the things that upset me. In the big book, it says anything that harms, threatens, or interferes. When I discover what those things are that create that hysterical reaction, I have to look at my history. I have to look at where that comes from. That's the only way I could be free of it. And by doing that, eventually I get that quiet mind. You know, some of you guys remember Gilligan's Island? You know, we were talking about Gilligan's Island the other day. Did you ever notice that Gilligan's Island was the 7 deadly sins? Think about it. The captain's gluttony, right? Gilligan's sloth, Marianne's envy, Ginger's lust, Mr. Hal's greed. I would have killed everyone on the island but Ginger. But you know, what I see in my life today in steps 6 and 7 is I put down the drink and I pick up the fork, right? Next thing you know, I can't see my feet. And I'm naked on my knees in steps 6 and 7 saying, God, I can't live like this anymore. So I put down the fork, I pick up the credit card. Now I'm going to fix what I did with the fork with the credit card. I'm in liposuction. You know, I'm buying clothes. And then I'm in steps 6 and 7 on my knees again in bankruptcy court saying, God, I can't live like this. Then I put down the credit card and start acting out in the rooms. Can't go to that meeting again. And I have to understand there's 412 step programs. They're all identical except for the first half of step 1. And unless I straighten out spiritually in 4 through 9, it's very easy for someone like me to play musical poisons in the first half of step 1 and never really spiritually evolve. And what I've understood now through doing this process, if you're new, we don't love each other in spite of these defects. If you've been around here for a while, one of the things we find out is we love each other because of them. And it's just that simple. If someone did to me what I did to myself, I hate to say it, but I would have killed them. In closing, if someone did to me what I did to others, I probably would have killed them. And then I come in these rooms and you want me to pray to God? I didn't want God to find out where I was. See, that's the conscious separation from God that Wilson talks about. Those three relationships with God, with self, and with others were destroyed. I was bankrupt in those three areas. You really look at the 12 steps by design. Steps 1 through 3, recreate and develop a relationship with God. 4 through 7, recreate and develop a relationship with self. 8 and 9, recreate and develop a relationship with others. 10 maintains my relationship with self. 11 maintains my relationship with God. And 12 through service in my community maintains, develops, and grows my relationship with others. So coming out of the steps, I'm able to live in harmony in those basic, simple relationships. There was a great spiritual teacher. He was asked, what's the most important thing of all your teachings? He said, love God with all thy heart, love thy neighbor as thyself. Built right into the steps. And if God scares you out of these rooms and you're a real drunk, don't worry about it. Booze will scare you back in. We got you. So in steps 1 through 3, I give it up. 4 through 7, I clean it up. 8 and 9, I make it up. 10, 11, and 12, I keep it up. And as a result of that, I'm able to navigate around the drama. I'm able to match calamity with serenity. I'm able to stay in fit spiritual condition. I'm able to reach back in my community and actually help somebody. You know, one of the oldest stories in AA, it's about a little 5-year-old kid. He's 5, and he wants to play with his dad, and the dad's like an accountant. He's trying to figure out a way to occupy this little 5-year-old. So what the dad does is he gets this map of the world, and he rips it up into like 50 pieces, and he gives it to the little boy, and he says, what I want you to do, son, is I want you to put this map of the world back together, and when you're done, we'll play. Gives him some tape. Little kid comes back in 2 minutes. He's got this whole map of the world reassembled, and it's perfect. The dad says, that's impossible. I'm 40. I couldn't do that. How did you do that? Little 5-year-old looks up at his dad and he says, well, dad, on the back of the map of the world, there was a picture of a man. I just put the man back together and the whole world fell into place. If you're new, that's the spiritual technology of the 12 steps. Again, to rebuild the man or woman. 1 through 3 with God, 4 through 7 with self through inventory, 8 and 9 with others through amends. And then to maintain, develop, and grow those three simple relationships. 10 with self, 11 with God, 12 with others. And, you know, for me, like so many of us, the whole world just fell into place. And again, I looked back at myself and I thought, how did you ever live like that? And thank you guys for having me, and enjoy the rest of the weekend. Thank you.
Damn, I don't even have anything to say. That was awesome.
Oh, wow.
Give another round of applause for our speaker, please.